Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This is episode 68. This time is 68, not the last time. And as always, I have here with me Arthur Sossins to call to my attention when I make mistakes. Hello, Arthur, how are you doing?
Every time you say lately JavaScript, it always associates with late night shows, you know, like, because it's always late for me when we are recording.
Probably like 2:30 in your time, right? Or not?
No, it's actually past midnight, just half past.
Oh, it's just 4 hours difference?
Oh. Yes.
Oh, no, it's 6 hours. I just made a wrong count. Anyway, we are here to talk about JavaScript. And as always, we have very interesting topics. We're going to just mention them briefly, just the long don't read version of the podcast. The first topic that we are going to talk about, maybe I should share the screen, is it sharing? I hope so. The first topic is about making JavaScript pure. The idea is to write your code in a way that is more testable, so like passing parameters to functions rather than passing values as global variables or variables defined outside of the scope of the function, so they become testable. So the next topic is an interesting feature. Actually, I think this is very cool, and it is implemented now in Firefox, and I'm sure other browsers will follow up because it's a well thought feature, very simple, which is to show you the pages that explain the errors that you may find in your the error console. So if you have an error in JavaScript, now you have a link to a page, in this case to the site of Mozilla, to explain that error. So this is very interesting, and we'll talk more in detail about this. Another article is a JavaScript variables hoisting, which this, from what I understood, I was not familiar about this word, but from what I understood, is to gather all variable declarations in the beginning of the scope of the functions. The next topic is about WebSockets and server-sent events. So this is more a tutorial to explain how you can implement applications based on WebSockets with the Node.js on the server side and some JavaScript code on the browser side. Then we talk about briefly about the release of jQuery 3.0. Then we talk about an article that defends test-driven design, so-called TDD, done on JavaScript. It tells about one weird trick that it will change the way you code forever. I'm not sure about that, but we'll get back once it's turned. The next topic is about the spread operator, which is basically allows you to specify that a certain function takes a variable number of arguments, and it is called all three dots change JavaScript. The next topic is just to briefly mention that ECMAScript 2016 language specification is finished, I suppose. I don't know if there will be revisions, but it's practically done. Then there is an article that talks about, did I skip this? I'm not sure. Basically, this article is about 15 ways to write self-documenting JavaScript. And it talks about good practices, according to the author,
yep,
that seem to, well, make the code more readable and self-explaining without comments. So personally, I do not use much comments, so I already like the proposal. And finally, there was a topic that talks about how WebAssembly can be implemented in practice in browsers that already support it. So these are the topics of the podcast. So let's start back to the first one. The first one, say, it is about an article that talks about that the title is Making Your JavaScript Pure. And pure in this context means that there could be pure functions and impure functions. And the pure functions take the values that are inside from parameters. And so in contrast, the impure functions take the values eventually from global variables or variables defined in the outer scope of the functions. And if I got this right, the idea is that pure functions are more testable because you can change the parameters and test the functions with different values that may make it easier, more flexible to test. Arthur, what did you got from this article? Am I interpreting this correctly?
Yeah, yes. Basically, the pure functions are the functions that are self-contained without outside dependencies. So, yeah, no relying on global or out-of-scope values and stuff like that. And about testing, I think the example that author used is the great example to understand it. So, at first, let me maybe try to share my screen when explaining. At first, we have an impure function which relies on global variable inner width of the window. And if we would want to test it, for example, it would mean in our test we would really need to resize our window each time we want to test with different value. But if we simply write a pure function which receives this value by the parameter, it already makes the testing much easier. We just pass new value on that, but in our code we can use this value when passing it. So
yeah,
this is the simple distinguished thing that can help you write tests easier for your application.
Yeah, this is curious, although I was aware about that aspect, I just was not aware that the code that takes the variable values that you want to probably use in your tests, the function would be called pure, and the others would be impure. Yeah. So I was just not familiar with this nomenclature, so always learning. Okay, the next topic, let me share the screen again here, is about one cool feature, as I mentioned in introduction, that Firefox is implementing in the Firefox developer tools. When you have an error, it will show you a link next to the error to explain the error. And this is so useful because what we usually do, well, I speak for myself, but maybe you also do that. When you have an error that you don't understand, have no clue what it means, you just copy the error message and paste it on Google and let's see what pages come out to explain it. And often you get go end up in a page of Stack Overflow or some other question and answer site on which these errors appear. And this is brilliant, I think. This feature is well thought. And
I think every browser needs this feature, and not only browsers. For example, in Node.js, when logging errors, it could also provide a link to some documentation in the logs and stuff like that. It would make our life really easier.
Yeah, it could actually. I was thinking further, like you could, for instance, if you are developing Node.js or PHP or some other server-side language, could somehow generate some code that would output an error message to the console log. So it would appear a link in the developer tools to explain the server-side error. So it could also be used for other language, not just JavaScript.
Pass server-side error to the browser's console.
Exactly. I have seen some packages in PHP classes that, well, they do not put links, but they output server-side errors as JavaScript HTML with JavaScript code that makes the errors appear in the developer console. So the regular users will not see it, but developers that are looking at the they can see what is going on. So kudos to Mozilla Foundation for this brilliant feature. It makes me go back to use Firefox again. Because sure. I've been using Chrome for years and got used to it. And I think it's a matter of time until Google figures that they need to also implement this feature.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so if you were not aware, like myself, now you are aware and should take a look, because it's probably much more useful than searching on Google for errors. Okay, the next topic that we are going to comment is about what they call variables hoisting. JavaScript variables hoisting. Basically, from what I understood from this, is that you can actually should, although I'm not sure what would be the advantages, declare variables used in a certain scope on certain functions and certain functions in general. Declare all of them in the beginning. I remember that every time I used JS lint or JS hint, it was keep telling me to gather all the declarations of variables using a function at the top, and just to silence the warning, I did that, but I never figured if there was an advantage in terms of optimization or just organizing better your code.
Probably not optimization. I think that probably it's for code organization, the code readability more, and sorting to less bugs.
I wonder if it has to do with sometimes you use a variable with the same naming for different purposes, sometimes with different types, and if you push all the declarations to the top, you notice that you are probably declaring the same variable more than once, and
declaring it is probably true.
You probably are causing yourself some problems, bugs that come from the use of the variables multiple times in a function without knowing that you actually use the same variable name more than once, and it probably can cause some bugs. Anyway, this article tells you about this. So we are going to move on to the next topic. The next topic is about WebSockets to implement server-side events. Basically, this is a tutorial on which they explain that you can use a package to implement WebSockets on the server side using Node.js, and then you can use certain event handlers to process all the interactions, open connections, methods that are being sent and received, errors, disconnections, and so on. So that would be on the server side. And on the client side,
sorry. No, I think you already skipped client side at the top.
The client side was first.
Yeah, this one.
Because they show the same the same function names. I did not notice. Of course, here is the declaration WebSockets. Socket to connect, and on the server side, it has similar declaration of functions. Well, it's not
really exactly, similar.
It's not exactly the same, because here you have event handler that is
on connection for a client to connect. Then when you connect, you get the client as a parameter and use it as a socket, same from the browser.
Well, you get an object, and then you can define functions. Now, actually, you call functions to communicate with the browser side. And this way, you can establish an interactive connection with the browser. And it all works on top of HTTP, so it is compatible with many browsers. And there is a list of bidirectional communication. Well, I don't know about these. What are these percentages? I don't know if you had an idea. So basically, this is telling that only IE9 and Opera Mini do not have a full implementation. So basically, all modern browsers have a full implementation. I don't know this percentage. Could this percentage be market share of this browser portion?
Yeah, I think, it seems so, because Chrome has the most. So probably that's it.
This is interesting. Chrome here. Yeah, Android browser. 0%, I have no idea what this means.
No one is using it.
Well, anyway, the article is interesting because it is a tutorial. That one thing that I did not get, there is the example code in the beginning, and over here it's what they call server sent events.
It seemed to be only one connection from server to the browser.
Yeah, but isn't it on top of a WebSockets? What is the difference?
It probably the similar, I don't know. Probably there is separate specification for it apart from together with the WebSockets.
Yeah, because over here it shows a different browser card. So and it even says that we should all vote for SSC to help make it a priority for the next release. That is to vote for Microsoft to implement it, because Microsoft has all this share, this less than 5%. Internet are using Internet at least be accurate. Okay, moving on. We are now going to just briefly mention the release of jQuery 3. We have already mentioned about it before. I don't know if there is much to say other than they are dropping Internet Explorer, right?
Well, not completely. They are dropping the old versions from 6 to 8, I think. 9th version is still supported. And I think the interesting also fact is that they started developing jQuery 3.0 since October 2014, so it's almost 2 years now. And there is an upgrade guide and migrate plugin which would analyze the code and check for changes that you need to make to upgrade to jQuery 3. But all in all, they say that's not much changes really, not much breaking changes really, but there are still some.
Yes, there is a whole list of changes here, and it seems many of them are bug fixes or
features, yeah.
Things that do not change much the back or the compatibility. So moving on, let me talk about the next topic, just increasing the font here, but sharing the screen on the other side. And this is an interesting article that the title is Build Your First Thing with WebAssembly. So WebAssembly is a way to represent some bytecode that implements that can implement some code that is binary, like CPU assembly languages. But I suppose this to convert Java to
assembly. You're still breaking up a bit.
I'm breaking up? Did you?
Yes.
What did you listen?
Did not hear the last part that you said.
Well, I was wondering if what you need to do to have some binary assembly code maybe compiled from JavaScript.
Well, WebAssembly is like, so basically it's like a standard of work, and I think there is a virtual machine that would execute it that this guy is using, the author is using basically. And he just mentioned it, that imagine if in 1996 some engineers from Sun Microsystems introduced Java virtual machine, but no Java language. So there is a machine that can execute this bytecode, but there is no language to write it and stuff like that. So he compared the WebAssembly is in a similar state right now. So there is a format in which you can have, as you see, the bytes, so which would probably get executed by some browsers which would run, but there is really no way to write them. And so what this author does, he found a way or created it themselves, I don't know, a way to convert awesome.js, the previous version of assembly like JavaScript, convert it directly to WebAssembly. So he even describes how to set it up further, how to compile his program, or not his program, I don't know, to do that.
So it's a compiler?
So everyone could probably either compiler or transpiler, I don't know exactly.
Yeah, because over here it's a successfully compiled SMJS code, total compilation time 1 millisecond, not stored in cache. And then I suppose this is the output I've done.
Since SMJS is still JavaScript and WebAssembly output is bytecode, so I could say it is a compiler. Yeah.
And then, but then it runs it. So running it is a feature that is already enabled in some browsers, at least.
I think in the latest Firefox and Chrome browsers, yes. Oh, but you need to go to specific config to enable it to run it. It would not run by default.
Yeah. There is, it says there is a tool called ASM to WSM. This is a Windows thing. Building Binarian. Oh, it's called Binarian. Binarian. So it converts, it compiles regular JavaScript into WebAssembly.
Not regular JavaScript, it's AwesomeJS compatible code, which is subset of JavaScript, which is compatible with.
How could it be this kind of code or not? Because over here we can see specific operations for 64 bits.
I think it's something like that. Yes.
So basically, this is so you do not need MScript, then, right?
Something like that, yeah.
And then you can play those games, Doom, and
in the browser. I would want to see a performance comparison between MScripting and WebAssembly, but it's too early for that, I think. So they need to at least make normal JavaScript compile to WebAssembly for others to create some comparison. Or compile C to WebAssembly, I don't know, which was easier.
Well, I think I'll get back to this topic later because it's still not very clear how you can use it. If it is something that compiles, it becomes immediately available to JavaScript, or you need to download some code dynamically or whatever. Anyway, so moving on to the next topic. Now, one that is really opinionated, I would say. The topic makes a this article makes a claim that if it is true, is because you agree with the author, but not necessarily many people agree with this. It talks about TDD, test-driven design. This reminds me of, I'm not sure, a few years ago, David Annemeyer Hansen, the author of Ruby on Rails framework, he wrote TDD is dead, and generated a lot of polemic. There were even a few hangouts with several personalities. I'm not sure if it was Martin Fowler. What matters is there is this discussion because it seems that he was saying that TDD is not the right way to go, because for several years he was trying to promote it, but he did not feel comfortable with that. And he even felt ashamed that he just kept keeping promoting something that you no longer believe. Well, Clear is claiming that, it's basically a defense of TDD. And before somebody listens and misinterprets it, TDD in practice means creating tests before you actually write. So you create the tests, write the code for the tests, and then you develop the functionality that is meant to implement sure that you, the tests test. This means that if for some reason you change your mind about the features or the way to implement them, you also need to update the tests. And I don't know, but I think many people understand the value of creating tests, but it's not something that they have fun. They rather write the code that actually implements the features than the tests that test the features. Although they reckon that having tests is valuable, so over time, if you break some features, the tests will be able to catch it and before you even ship any code to production. So that's the value of doing tests. But you do not have necessarily to do TDD. You do not necessarily need to do tests before you write code. Maybe you are trying something, some approaches to implement a certain feature, and the code that you start with will be very different from the code that you end with to implement that feature. That's my opinion. What is the big problem with TDD? I don't know, Artus, what is your point of view?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I'm on par with TDD to write tests before code, but what I would take from this article is that maybe TDD is not only writing tests before code, but it's about thinking of tests while writing the code. So like we discussed previously with Pure and Pure functions. So from TDD point of view, you would consider writing Pure functions from the startup because you know you would then need to test them.
Yeah, that's a good point because I was not trying to minimize what TDD is or just saying that it implies writing tests before you write code. I'm not say that is that because
and it does, yeah.
Yeah,
and it does. It implies it. And
yes,
that's not the way I would do it. So yeah, I'm not a TDD developer.
Yes, I agree with you is that the DD part of TDD means that you will design your applications so they are more testable. And like the case that you mentioned of Pure and Pure functions. And so it has also that value. On the other hand, some people also defend that you have to create tests for everything. And if you create tests for everything, sometimes you end up writing more code to test your actual code. And that's a lot more time to develop your code. And all this is fine, but it comes with a price. That's what I mean. And for instance, if you do not have much time because you are working for a customer that couldn't care less if you are using TDD or not, you probably are not addressing the requirements. Like for instance, that you are developing a site that needs to be ready before Christmas because the Christmas season is when your customer sells more products. If you take more time because you invested a lot in TDD, you not meet the priorities of your customer, and you will be unhappy and could not care less if you said that you use TDD. I'm not saying that TDD bad. I'm just saying TDD is probably not all this great approach that some people preach. And I think probably TDD is more adequate when you start with a clear specification of something that you have to implement. Let's say that you are going to implement a component that implements a protocol, and that protocol is specified in a RFC document or some other kind of specification document. So you know that it must comply to that specification, so it is easy and even convenient to use TDD in that case, because we will implement tests that comply, that verify the compliance of your code with that, I would say, that implementation. I see great value on that, but when you start a project, you don't have a clear specification of what you are, how you are going to implement it. So I think it's the majority of the cases of development. And I think in that case, most people would do tests, but after every written the code and they are confident that their approach is more, is solid. I don't know if you have a similar perspective. Do you often write tests for your code, for all your code, or maybe just part?
Yes, of course. But the author actually has a completely different perspective. He actually says that your code would be much more. Basically, he said that TDD improves the code quality not only through tests but also how you are writing them. Your code would be much more cleaner, understandable, and you would come back after years to it, and it won't look like mess, and you could understand and fix anything you want.
Yeah.
So that was the one trick that I think mentioned.
Yeah. Sorry, you're.
That was the one trick that he mentioned in the article, that in the title that he was talking about TDD.
Yeah. So, well, the major thing that I see against TDD is it comes with a cost, precisely yeah. Because developers start thinking of a project and in the middle they change the way they think it would be better and to invest on updating the tests, and sometimes the tests actually represent a lot of code and take more time, so it's not that it's bad, but it comes with a price. So that's basically my take. Okay, we covered this topic a lot, and I'm sure that it's not consensual. Many people have different points of view defend against or for a TDD. So let's move on to the next topic, on which we're going to cover something that was introduced in the recent ECMAScript versions, which are which is the spread operator. It's used to specify something that you could use, for instance, for the variable number of arguments, or I think to expand arrays. And for instance, you can build an array from an array that exists, but join it with another array, which is an example that is shown here. Anyway, since this is available on most recent implementations of ECMAScript, have you ever used this kind of code?
No.
You use Node.js a lot, right?
Yes, but the kind of new, and maybe we're just transferring to some of them. But talking more about the article, probably even now by habit, I would use the arguments object, which is the array containing all the parameters passed to a function. And yeah. As its author describes, it's a pain to use it because if you have function inside function that its scope is rewritten and you need to save it to some other variable on the outside scope and stuff like that. And this actually, as you named spread parameter, I think in JavaScript it's called the rest parameter, because you can have some, like, I think, predefined arguments before, and then rest is put in this argument that you specify after the three dots, or stuff like that. And so it helps in those cases, and I think it really improves the parameter management in the functions that way.
People tend to use, for instance, when they instantiate a object, they pass an options array. and
yeah,
that options array is to define parameters that may be optional. They have default values defined inside the constructor, but instead of passing an array, you could also pass a variable list of arguments. I don't know if that is the point of view of the article, because I do not read it in full detail. I think the problem with variable lists of arguments is that they assume that if you want to pass, not in JavaScript, not with spread operator, but in other languages, such as C or even PHP, that is very similar to C, they assume if you have a variable list of arguments, the order of the arguments is important. Now, with the spread operator, I'm not sure, because in practice it is a sort of array, and the array may have some elements or not.
Yes.
So you can skip arguments, and I believe that is more flexible than the traditional implementation that assumes if you have four arguments that are mandatory and the fifth argument is optional, if the fifth argument is there, it represents a certain parameter. If you want to have a sixth parameter, but not have the fifth, it will be complicated, because you could not skip it. And that's the advantage that I see in having the spread of it. So I think it has a depth value, but the author says all three dots change JavaScript. It's a bit pretentious. I'm not sure.
It's not only about the function parameters, but as you mentioned, also about arrays and other stuff. So it just provides new ways of doing stuff in JavaScript, maybe more efficient, maybe more elegant, but not in all cases, of course, but in some cases too.
Yeah. What I meant is that maybe change JavaScript because it's a new feature, it has a certain value, but I'm not sure if change the JavaScript developers. I don't know if there are many developers taking advantage of this feature, even more because I'm not sure if it was ECMAScript. When was this made available? Was it before ECMAScript 2016 or?
No, I think not.
It says ECMAScript 6. How does ECMAScript 6 mean? Because now years to the specification instead of versions.
Yeah, I'm always mixing them up.
Yeah, me too. And maybe this is something that is not even available in most ECMAScript implementations that you use around. But that's why I was asking about Node.js. What version of Node.js? What ECMAScript version of Node.js relies on?
There is no like specific definition, because not all features are still supported in this version, I think, in Node.js 5.
So in practice, very few people are using this, right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, so moving on, just to mention something that I just mentioned that about the ECMAScript specification. It seems the final version, or at least the complete version of ECMAScript 2016 is finalized, probably to have revisions, but it seems that now it is complete. I think that is the purpose of this article. Actually, this is it's not an article, it's the specification. Yeah. So, how does that change your world? I don't know. You tell me. Is it better now?
It should be.
Yeah. Okay.
And now, for me, as a regular JavaScript developer, I saw some other new developers code using all the new features, promises and stuff. And for me, it was kind of unreadable. It took some time for me to understand it, how it works exactly.
Yeah, did it Perl? Since I'm used to PHP, every time I look at Perl, I wonder what that's because Perl was developed in a way a long time ago, and it is in a way that it seems they were saving characters like dollar underscore means something. And if you don't know what is that something, looking at it will not help. You will not guess it. I think the newer version of ECMAScript are not that bad. They have things that seem readable, even though you may not quite understand what they mean exactly in practice. Okay, moving on to one last article, on which the author mentions 15 ways to write self-documented JavaScript. And the first thing that comes to my mind was that could be inline comments to make your code better. And to my surprise, it was not that. It's perfect the opposite. No comments. You just suggest some good practices that you would write. You follow to write your code, and you look at there, and your code looks readable, understandable, even without comments. I don't know. I think that is what I got from this article. What did you think about this?
Yeah, it's mostly guidelines on how to construct your code to make it more readable, like to scope it as much as possible, to reduce it in as small as bit as possible, like not having some math expressions, but replace expressions with functions, or do not use variables like multiple variables or expressions in each, but use a result of this expression, or use a variable, or use a function, or anything like that. So, the more you minimize the scope, the more you minimize the problem, the better it is to understand it, because you can name all the functions and all the variables as you want, and you would probably name it the way that they would resemble what they are doing, and you would understand it from just looking.
Well, there are some examples here that I probably would not, I would write differently, but sometimes I also feel lazy and would write the way it is here. For instance, here it puts this EL. I understand this is an abbreviation of element, and it's not meant to be verbose, just meant to be, how would I say, suggestive. It suggests what it is, not without being verbose. But usually when I write code, I tend to use the full names. I will put element instead of EL, but I confess that sometimes I am lazy, and when I have to write a code that refers to a variable, many times I probably, and it's like a syllable, very short, so I do not always follow that verbosity as I'm suggesting. I don't know what is your style. Do you prefer something more verbose or something more shorter?
I'm somewhere in the middle. I would not use such a verbose approach, but on the other hand, when someone with which I work wrote some complex ternary operators in one single line kind of creeps me out, so too, because I can't really understand.
You do not use ternary operators?
Yes, I use it a lot, but not the complex with multiple inside scoping and stuff like that.
Just ternary probably operators inside ternary operators.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, okay, nowadays CPU has plenty of memory, and it's not exactly one saving a few bytes that will make your code better. So that's what I think. Hello, now we are going to talk about the Innovation Award winners and nominees. First, we start by the Innovation Award winners and nominees of April in JS classes for JavaScript. Arturos, which ones would you like to comment? There are like 7 nominees. That was great.
Let me zoom in a bit. And the first one what I wanted to comment is a web code CamJS Chrome extension, which basically packages a Chrome extension that allows you to scan a QR code with your webcam and display its data. I think there was a screenshot of how it would work. So this was it. And as you see that when you take a picture and it's parsed, it would can show you the contents of it. And it's made as a nice Chrome extension. And this package was developed by Andras Tot from Hungary. And he did not choose a prize. But yeah, I think it's not his first packages extension, or it will be in the next awards, I think.
Yeah,
I remember there was something similar about the Chrome extension, right?
Yes, actually, there's a package that do that, but not as a Chrome extension. But he also has other nice Chrome extensions.
Yeah, I thought so.
Because not everybody knows how to implement Chrome extensions in JavaScript.
Yeah. That's really nice. Next one I wanted to comment is a package called JS Canvas Shapes Draw. Basically, it's a package that not only can draw different shapes, but also provides a UI, a user interface to draw it. I think we can have a couple of screenshots here that would show the whole UI and the parametric, and you can draw arbitrary or shapes or predefined shapes, or probably even evaluate functions. So it can be really complex, and in the end, you have your shapes drawn. Don't know really the purpose, maybe, but the idea is that it's implemented in Canvas, and all the UI is there. It is really interesting, and basically,
it seems more like an application than an individual component.
Exactly. And it was developed by Juan Jose from Spain, and he got one ebook of choice by Bact for this package. The next one I wanted to mention is JavaScript MP4 parser, which parses MP4 video files and extracts meta information about it. And it was developed by Dan Tigny-Francois from France. I don't think there is a demo or anything more. Yeah, basically, but the usage is as easy as this, to just provide a file, and in the callback you get the data. Yes, you want to mention something?
I think his name is Francois, because it's French. And probably he did not put the Sublilla in there. He also has developed several other components that perform the same action, but for different video formats. So it's quite interesting and useful.
Okay. And the last one is Pak Seguro. Do I pronounce it correctly? I think it's a payment processing service. And Edvald Zimonek from Brazil developed Node.js module to deal with this payment processing, probably to accept payments, right? So yes. Is it something popular in Brazil?
Yes, that's a payment provider in Brazil, and you develop an interface to that payment provider, but in Node.js, so it can process not only redirect the user to the payment page. It's similar to PayPal, but also process the notifications about the status of the payments. So it's useful for those that are using Node.js.
That's it on my part.
Okay, on my part, I would also like to comment on a few packages. Let me pick them here. Need to share the screen as always, but this time it's more complicated because
we have to find the right screen.
I need to share on one browser the screen of the other browser. Okay, I think now you see it, right?
Yep.
So first one I would like to comment is precisely a similar package to the one you mentioned by Dantini Francois for doing the same, except it's for video files on AVI format. The AVI format is quite used on Windows. So what it does is practically the same, being able to read some information from the files and tell details about the files even before you actually upload them to the server. So you can do this on the browser. The next package that I want to comment is another package, this time by Qiu Huang from France, and he has submitted a package that seems simple, but it's really interesting, to manage lists of books of authors, and provides a way to list them and sort them on the page by name, author, and genre, and publication date. So all this is done at the browser side. So it is useful when you want to display these kind of listings, and you already have all the information in the page, but you just sort it according to the user criteria. And the last page that I want to mention, yet again, another package for the same purpose. This one by Dantini for Francois is for processing. I think it's Matroska, right? The MKV format. So it's yet another format for video, but this one is for Matroska format. So kudos again. I think it's something even more, but it was approved in the next month. So I think you talk back to him again soon. Now, regarding the Innovation Award rankings of 2016, they did not change much, despite that we have had several more packages to comment, nominated from these different people. Endstoth is still ahead with 4 packages and 16 points, but Dantini Francois is coming close with 4 packages and 14 points. Then comes Juan Jose from Spain, one on packages for 6 points, and Edvaldo Zimonek with one package and 5 points, Stefan Shepard, one package and 3 points, Akobian from I think Armenia, right? Armenia with one package and one in 3 points is tied with also Stefan Chapman, Kiwan from France, and Sergio Flores Janis from Mexico, all with one package and 3 points. In ninth position, then comes Pravin Sonawane with one package and 2 points, and then Far Adur Rahim from Bangladesh with one package and 1 point. Now, by country, this time France passed Hungary, so there were some changes here. It is not like in the past months that there was a relation between the first place and his country in the award winners by country. So this time France is ahead with 5 packages and 17 points, followed by Hungary with 4 packages and 16 points. Then comes Spain with 1 package 6 points, Brazil with 1 package 5 points, then Mexico with 2 packages and 4 points, tied with Armenia. Then comes Australia with 1 package and 3 points, then India with 1 package and 2 points, Bangladesh with 1 package and 1 point. Anyway, we practically reached the end of this podcast. I'd like to thank you, Artis, again for coming and staying up this late. I guess it's now bedtime for you.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Not bad in terms, not good. I mean, bad like lying in your bed.
Yep.
So thank you again for coming. And on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Good night.